Oh, we can't hear you. I think you're
hey
muted.
Hey, guys. I was muted.
Hey, Chris.
Hey.
You made it,
hey,
Chris. You made it away, huh?
Yeah.
You still in your scrubs?
I am still in my scrubs, so if I have any, like, parts or goo on me, please excuse me. So.
Parts or goo. That's awesome.
It does happen sometimes.
Yeah.
They're like zombie goo?
Oh, I didn't see your notes there, Chris.
We'll you're definitely we'll call it zombie goo. So.
This is the Home Tech Podcast, show number 65, recorded on Friday night, March 16th, 2012. I am your host, Jim Collison, broadcasting live and commercial free from the AverageGuy.tv studios here in a very warm today for March 16th, and it broke the 80s. Man, we are seeing some great weather across the country. Actually, I came up from Missouri, and everything's blooming down there, so I think winter's out of here. Hopefully, we've seen the end of snow and ice, and we'll just see rain and summer. We record here from the Average Guy Studios in Bellevue, Nebraska, posted each week with world-class show notes out at theaverageguy.tv. You can contact the show, podcast at theaverageguy.tv. Track me down on Twitter, and I've been using a lot more Twitter lately because I actually use it for work now, and I appreciate you guys chatting with me. I'm getting a few more tweets during the week from you guys. Rennie, thanks for your tweets, and I actually had somebody ask me about a fitness tech podcast, which I haven't done in about 9 months. And they said, hey, are you done doing them? I just got caught up. I was like, wow. Well, yeah, we're done for now. So on the other side of fitness tech, we have not started those back up, but I appreciate your tweets. You can also find us on Facebook and iTunes just by searching for The Average Guy Podcast and leave a comment on iTunes if you're out there. Hopefully leave a good one, and that always helps with our search rankings. We've also redesigned the site for all the links that you might need to download it to your iPod, iPad, or any Android device that you might have. Just look for the links on the right-hand side of the page. I've also opened up a new Twitter account called The Average Guy TV. Sole purpose is to let you know when the show is on or when the show is off. It seems like my schedule has been nuts, as well as most of the hosts. We've had a hard time getting shows done, which is why we're here on a Friday night as opposed to Thursday. And so now hopefully I can tweet right from my phone if I think I'm going to miss the show. And if you go out to theaverageguy.tv/live, you can see the tweet. It's more of an announcement section right above the live stream. All right, we got that done. It is Friday night. Thursday didn't work out. I was down in Kansas City last night for some for a conference, actually, that was this morning. Made the trip down there, made the trip back up today, but just cut right in the middle of Thursday night. Maybe good that we didn't do it on Thursday night anyways. I think everybody was a little jammed up. But joining us tonight, of course, my friend out in St. Louis and the doctor of disaster, Chris Lux, how are you?
Oh, no, how'd I get that moniker?
I just made it up. You said goo. You might have goo on you when you came in. I was
maybe
it was a disastrous day in the ER today.
I ran here straight from the ER. Well, every day is a little bit of a disaster in the ER. Otherwise,
but
it wouldn't
more
be
than
the ER. So.
But some more than others, maybe, right?
No, I don't think I have any goo on me. So. But I would take a shower before I hugged any of you. So
that's always a good thing. Chris, how are things in your neck of the woods? I know you're making some decisions about some future stuff. Anything you
I
share?
Am. Well, nothing yet. So I've got one last fellowship interview, and then I put all of my chips into a list, and I find out on May 2nd where the fates will take me. So
all right,
kind of all over the country. I got options in the West Coast, the East Coast, the Midwest. Really, the only place I didn't look was the South. So, got everything else covered.
Just
so.
move someplace with ample Wi-Fi. That's or ample bandwidth. That's all.
That's
we
right.
Have.
Or a plug-in somewhere. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
That'll
good.
Be key.
All right. So a little over or a little under 2 months, and we'll kind of know your next duty.
And I have to apologize if my voice is froggy tonight. I'm getting over a bit of a bug that I'm sure I picked up from one of my friends in the emergency room.
Yeah.
But I've basically been sleeping for 4 days, and this was my first day back into the ER. So,
Chris, are medical professionals on average more sick than the rest of us because they're around it so much?
I don't think so. I think we like to think that we're kind of like school teachers, you know, where the first few months, a school teacher is sick, like, forever. And I think intern year, a lot of us got little things here and there. But then you get exposed to so much stuff that I think you just kind of get it all early, and then you're done. For me, I don't know what I picked up, but it was some kind of fun bug. But the other thing is we're washing our hands constantly.
Like, yeah.
We've got alcohol or soap or something on our hands all the time. So I think it evens out in the end.
Yeah. When I spent some time with my dad, you know, he broke his hip back in the winter, and we were in the hospital quite a bit. And every time I'd go in, you know, you'd pump and wind up, pump, and they got that stuff outside the rooms, and you'd be washing all the time. That just destroys your hands after a while, and it leaves kind of a filmy, you know.
Yeah,
how do you deal with that day in and day out?
You know, I've kind of gotten used to it, but there'll still be like once every other month, I'll kind of I'll look down and I'm like, wow, what's all over my clothes? I'm like, oh, it's my hands. They just fell off again. Like, it's kind of nasty, but, you know, there's new skin under there. It's just it like turns into some kind of like alligator
like a
skin
film.
And falls off.
Yeah.
And, yeah, it's awesome.
Well, good to have you on the podcast tonight, and appreciate you taking a Friday night to come out and
be with us. Talk tech.
Yeah, you bet. Also with us tonight and back after a week off, maybe two, Christian. Of course, he's the moderator and the stud behind BIOS Mods. And Christian, any update to the HP Microserver BIOS modification, or is that just pretty much rock and roll, ready to go?
The unlock is ready to go, pending on any stuff with S3 sleep, but I haven't had the opportunity to dissect that thing.
Yeah, so. You've been all over. Last weekend you were out in New York, is that?
Yeah, New York City. Did a concert in Alice Tully Hall. That was pretty intense.
Nice,
and,
nice.
Yeah, so came back to another hardcore 1 or 2 weeks of school from there.
Yeah.
Took a SAT round on Saturday.
Full-fledged one or practice?
Oh, full-fledged.
All right, yeah.
Yeah, and...
Why do you say a round? Don't you just have to do it once?
Well, we'll see.
Oh, come on, dude. They're gonna investigate you for, like, having all the answers ahead of time. Like,
no, they'll let you take it. My kids took it multiple times.
Yeah.
Yeah, normally the max is 3 on the SAT.
Yeah, don't beat yourself up over it too much.
Yeah,
right. So. And, of course, you're getting ready for some summer internships, and or it's internship, I should say.
Do you know what you're
Well, one is confirmed, and one is magical at this point.
Yeah, and the one that's confirmed?
Yeah, what is confirmed?
The one that is confirmed is with NASA, NASA Langley.
That's your safety program?
For
awesome.
10 weeks. And I'll be working with their lead IT developer in their IT for 10 weeks. So I'll be enjoying some fun stuff there.
Turns out Christian's a pretty smart kid, by the
way.
Not that we didn't know that, but congratulations on that, Christian. Summer is going to be here like that, and you're going to be gone. But it'll be fun to kind of hopefully follow you through that internship, and bring you in on the shows, and you can kind of.
Do you get to go on the vomit comet?
Probably not.
No, he's going
to
be.
That'd be nasty.
He's going to be coding.
They're going to be coding.
Summer, right?
They're gonna tie me to a chair and say, "Produce X line of codes for this day before you leave."
Nice.
And then. So that'll shoot up most of June and July. Will be gone, and then we'll have to see if any magical fairies fly me away elsewhere. So,
well, good stuff. We're looking forward to the summer for you, and we might have another possibility for you too. Although that's a super long shot because you just have 3 weeks left. So we'll see how that goes. Hey, the iPad 3 came out this week. I wanted to ask you guys a question about that. And if I gave you $700, would you want it? Chris, if I gave you the money, would you go out and buy it? Would you use it?
So, you know, it's hard to say no, but I think I'm going to say no. I think I would put it in my pocket, and I would wait for a Windows 8 tablet.
Nice. We just had Mike Howard and I just had this big off-the-air kind of we'll actually post that here at the end of the show discussion around the Windows tablet, and he is very bearish on that, on Windows and the tablet.
That's
and,
the good one, right?
Well, is bullish
bear.
Is bear the good and bull the bad? he does not think that the Windows the mobile, you know, the Windows 8 is going to go anywhere on tablets.
But, it's made for tablets.
Yeah. No, I absolutely agree with you. Now, you're a Windows Phone guy too, right?
So, I am. And, you know, they're different. As much as it's supposed to, like, unify things, I think Windows Phone 8 is going to have to come closer to Windows 8 because they're not the same. You know, even down to, like, what Metro actually is, I think, is different. You know, that Metro on the phone is entering an app and then sliding through different titles and then moving down through different layers, and it's things being in these nice grids. And Metro for the start menu is a bunch of tiles that you click a tab and it opens something in full screen. Mm-hmm. I'm like, yeah, that's cool, but I want my email to have like different accounts across the top, and then from there I want it to have different categories, and from there I want to be able to go into sent and folders. Like, I'd like the Metro thing to go a little deeper.
Okay.
That being said, I've been living in it. I've had it on my laptop, and I want to touch it all the time. I want to reach out and like tap on stuff, but it's like, oh, I'm ready for this tablet thing to happen.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
So nope. Good. I'd wait.
Put it in your pocket, Christian. I'm going to give you $700 to go buy an iPad 3. What are you going to do?
I'm going to go buy an Ultrabook.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, what's your reasoning?
Mostly, I don't know. I haven't really been indoctrinated into iTunes apps and that kind of deal. So, really, I wouldn't be doing much on it aside from web browsing and email, which I already do on my phone and netbook. So there's no utility for me in terms of what it would do that I'm not already doing with my other stuff. So,
and we're not your typical users, though. I'll just throw that out.
Right? Yeah, but I mean, from a productivity standpoint and not from like I'm a nerd sitting in a corner playing a bunch of video games like Angry Birds and destroying my intellectual capacity, I don't see it being, I mean, for me at least, a tool that somehow has advantages over my netbook, for say.
We bang on our machines too much. We dig into the guts too much. We want to change too many things. We want to.
But I mean, even just from like a file word processing, email, internet.
Yeah.
Our school is actually requiring all students to go iPad next year. Because all the textbooks will be on the iPad and that kind of stuff. So seniors are the only one exempt, so I won't have to get it. But I mean, I've seen some of the apps they're going to incorporate that it's like you have the teacher iPad that interacts with all the student iPads and a lot of interactive learning applications, which is cool, but nothing overly special or something that simplifies my daily workload from a tech standpoint.
Okay. Yeah, I hear you saying it's not really that useful of a device for you.
Yeah.
And you're also more of a producer than a consumer. You're producing more stuff than you consume. And the iPad is primarily a consumption device.
Precisely. You know,
which is fine and which is great. And I would say that I do 90% of what I do is consumption, but when I want to produce, I put a lot of effort into it, and I think you'd get more out of it when you're on a more full-fledged machine.
Yeah, and before the show, I was telling Mike, and folks will hear this later, but I really like the idea of like an Ultrabook that had the pivot. You know, all of a sudden that pivoting screen now on a laptop would make sense. So open it, turn it around, and it goes to Metro?
Or the snap out.
Sure. Thing. Sure.
But the thing is, Jim, if you haven't played with Metro a lot, I don't think you would that the Metro would come out just because you pivoted and made it into a tablet form. I think Metro would be there regardless. That would still be your start menu in the laptop format. It's just that you wouldn't be, and you could touch it there too. But if you wanted to switch to an all touch menu, if you wanted to watch a movie or if you wanted to play a game, you could flip it and lay it down flat.
Yeah.
And get rid of
the maybe
keyboard.
So. Yeah. That's
there's a really cool one. I don't know who made it. I was at Micro Center in Cincinnati a few months ago, and there was a tablet that didn't look like it had a keyboard, but then you slid the monitor like to the side and it like popped up. And there was a keyboard underneath it, almost like a flip phone type thing. where you have a slide-out keyboard, like the what's an example of one of those, but anymore. But it was like a hidden keyboard in the netbook style thing,
like the phone, the phones have had for a
like
while,
a, like
right?
a just sidekick, a bigger version of it, like
Sidekick. Yeah, sure.
And it would slide out of that and then slide back down. And I thought, well, that's pretty good because it didn't make it that much thicker. I imagine the battery was going to suffer on that thing.
Yeah.
I think a lot of new form factors are going to come out of this, and it's going to bring more touch into it, which I think is good.
Yeah. Yeah.
So.
Well, and I wouldn't either. I'm not interested in picking one up. I don't know. Now the iPad 2 has dropped to $399, and that may be something worth considering as they get a little bit cheaper.
I'll tell you who I think of it for is like I think, oh, my dad might like that. My grandfather might like that.
Yeah.
That's who I think of when I see that kind of stuff. Yeah. But I don't think of it and say, oh yeah, I want to go out and get one. So.
I think I'm the tech support for my mom now, I've been forever. And I think when that PC goes, I think her next PC is probably going to be an iPad 2 at this point.
Sure.
And if they had open Wi-Fi in the building, that would make my decision a lot easier.
Unless you can get her podcasting and then you need to get her a desktop.
Yeah, no. Although she might try. But anyways, okay. Well, I think we had to cover that with the news this week of it coming out. They're going to sell a gazillion of those things.
I know.
It'll be interesting to see. Well, I did spend some money this week. Actually, last weekend I was hanging out with the guys on Rich's Random Podcast, and I'll show you what I spent. So I had $300, and I bought a Fujitsu a Primer G. It's a TX100 S2. That means nothing to anyone, and it doesn't matter what it is. There's a little. It's kind of just a. It's a server configuration, little box, 4 gig of RAM. It came with a 250 gig hard drive, Core i3 540. So the first gen Core i3 series chip. Pretty low power usage. It's the one I use today on my primary PC. A nice little box. Actually, I thought on the picture it looked a little bit smaller than it actually is. I've got it set up right now, and I've been installing updates to it. The goal is to actually make it a dedicated broadcast server and maybe offload some processes to it, not automatically, because one of the problems I have with podcasting is you get too much automatic stuff set up on it, then all of a sudden in the middle of a podcast, something takes off, and then everything goes haywire. But for $299, and I really did need a more powerful box. I've been doing broadcast server has been my main PC, and I've been using a little P4 at 3 gigahertz. The thing just is on fire when I'm running it because it's an old P4 chip. You know, those things ran super hot. It actually drives the video okay. It's not great, but it drives it okay. So been installing some updates to it and I was hoping to have it actually in and ready to go for tonight's podcast, but it just finished up its updates. So after the show, probably tonight, I will put that in, but a nice little deal. It had gone, it's at Newegg. It had gone off sale, or they'd run out of stock right after I bought it. And some of the guys at the home server show were trying to get a hold of one and they couldn't. It's back in stock. So as of this recording Friday, March 16th. It's back in stock. Nice little box, built really well, very solid. It's got a nice. It doesn't feel like a cheap case, you know, that you might get. I think for $299, not a bad little desktop.
So why that over the micro server?
Oh, processor power for sure.
This is more powerful.
Oh yeah, that Core i3 is probably twice as powerful, maybe a little bit more than that. The 1.5 N40L that's in the I think they call it a Neo, that's in the micro server. And I've got both, and I tried that at one point in time, and the live stream software brings it to its knees.
Mm.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, yeah, nice little find. This will be my deal of the week if it stays around. For the week, but the guys, you know, the guys are a bad influence. I used to think the BYOB guys were bad, but Rich O'Neill, like, dude, you just need to get your wallet out, buy, you know, because I was talking about this P4 that I'm running.
Yeah.
And he was like, it has hyper threading, but I mean, that thing I've had forever. He was like, you just need to buy it. And so for $299, not too bad of a deal.
So trying to keep pace with Rich O'Neill on buying technology is about as smart as earmuffs, Christian. That college friend that you tried to keep pace with when you were going out to the bars drinking, you know? Okay, you can take your earmuffs off now, Christian.
Yeah, yeah.
But I'm sorry, that's mean. But anyway, no, it's like, yeah, I've heard the podcast before, and I'm just like, oh my God, I can't believe how much they just spent in this one podcast.
I know. So They're bad. They are a bad, yeah. bad influence
and
on me.
We love living vicariously through
them. Oh, I know. That Sunday afternoon podcast, you know, we uh-huh. pretty much move Rich's podcast 2 p.m. Central, 3 Eastern on Sunday afternoons here at theaverageguy.tv. Yeah. I seems like I buy something every week. And then I also picked up a little $22 Intel PCI network card for the micro server, because it just has one, and I want to run some VMs off of it, and it's really handy to kind of split those apart and assign an IP to each one of the NIC
expansion slots, PCI slots on that.
Yeah, it has two, and nice. I've got a USB 3 card in one, and I'll put the NIC card in the other. $22 for a gigabit Ethernet card right now on Newegg. They've got, and you know what? I went to Best Buy. Now this is you know, you always pay twice as much, right? But they've got what's their house brand? Dynex? Is that sound right?
The
Dynex.
Like it.
$20 for the card for a very similar card. I'm sure the chipsets. I mean,
dude, I haven't stepped in Best Buy in years. It seems like
that's a good place to look at things.
I don't know. Not when you got a Fry's or a Micro Center or something like that.
Right. You got to remember where I live.
I'm spoiled. Spoiled, Jim.
Yeah. No, you got to remember where I live. Christian, what's the nearest? You got a super? Do you have a super Fry's or Micro Center or something near you?
No.
No. So everything's online for you guys too.
Yeah.
Okay.
Newegg or Amazon?
Well, you have Best Buy, but
you don't buy from there, right?
No.
No.
Well, as a former employee, that's another reason I may not like going in there, but I used to be a blue shirt guy.
Yeah.
So
yeah. Before the Geek Squad?
Oh, dude, if Geek Squad had existed, I would have ruled them like an iron fist. Because every day they'd have like these people who were the install guys in the back, and they'd come up and they're like, this thing's broken. Do you know how to fix it? I'm like, yes, but I'm a salesperson, so you need to leave me alone. And they kept making me do their stuff for them, so I was like, yeah, I'm not doing this anymore.
But, yeah, it's tough.
I would have had the little Volkswagen bug and
run around. Yeah. It's better that you're in the hospital doing your doctor.
I suppose.
That's good stuff. Chris, you said you had a little story for us.
Oh, yeah. So this is the Home Tech Podcast. So,
yeah.
In the last, I believe, 24 hours, I've had probably the largest piece of tech in my apartment die on me. And
TV?
That's my refrigerator.
Oh, no.
So everything's very warm in my refrigerator. And I measured the temperature, and it's about 67 degrees Fahrenheit, which is about 4 degrees cooler than my apartment. And the freezer, everything is kind of frozen, but it's kind of mushy. So this is a pseudo-tech question. What do you throw out and what do you save? Does everything have to go because it could all be functified now? Or, you know, I think the meats and cheeses need to go.
Cheeses would make it a little longer.
But they're kind of soft and squishy now.
I guess it depends what kind of cheese.
The butter is kind of smushy.
Butter can stay out. That's fine. Butter can sit out for weeks before it becomes rancid.
Eggs,
I wouldn't give any
in
more
the shell.
Any 3 days now. Hard boil those things though, if you can. Just throw them in hard boil and boil
them
now.
Good now, you think?
How long has it been?
Probably a day.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. There's some tech. I have an egg hard boiler.
Yeah.
It's a little Black and Decker thing. So I'll just
And Decker.
I think it's Black and Decker. Yeah.
Wow. Nice.
it looks like an egg. It's great.
Yeah. I wouldn't trust the meat. Meat would.
No,
be
meats are going.
Or you cook them.
The milk has got to go.
Yeah. Yeah.
So just yeah.
Chug it. Chug the milk.
eat the all eggs the raw. Cheese. Yeah. So yes, I'm a little bummed that my refrigerator is dead, but I'm renting my apartment, so I don't know.
Is that and oh, so they'll replace that? I was gonna say, do you have to go out and get a fridge? Because
I don't know. Can you not fix fridges? Like, can I just put a new processor in it and reboot it?
Yeah. Like, did you just try to reboot it?
I don't know. No. Don't they just put new Freon in it, or?
Yeah, sometimes if the compressor goes, you can just replace the compressor, yeah. And then.
Oh, my rental people are cheap. They'll just like.
All right, put
a cold pack in it every day for me or something.
You're
like.
Yeah, it's well, that's a bummer. That's a bummer. Yeah, cook up as much as you can. I mean, some of that stuff will stay around.
Well, I found it this morning, and I cooked the warm bacon. Because you can't let bacon die. That's just not okay.
No, that would be a crime. Yeah.
But everything else, I'm bemoaning the loss of. Thankfully, I'm a rather poor bachelor who just kind of has like 2 days worth of food in his fridge at any given time. So I'm not throwing that much out. But I made this really nice thing of salsa. It's like a gallon of salsa. And the tub is now like filled with air where it's eaten by
bacteria.
So I think I need to destroy that. So.
I would. Although the hotter you make it, the longer that stuff will last. But Christian,
yeah, but it's going to be hot because it's eating through my esophagus.
Christian, this is a little insight into what life's going to be like for you when you're in college. And
he has a refrigerator. He knows what happens. So.
That'll be interesting.
More like in 3 months when I have to do this.
Yeah, that's true. You will be on your own. But you've done that the last two summers,
what happened?
Right?
Oh, for the summer?
Yeah, for the summer. You've been gone the last two summers, right? So you're pretty self-sufficient.
And then when the fridge on the space station goes out, what do you do?
Call Mission Control and say bailout.
And when you drive the Mars probe into the planet, how long do you last at NASA after that? You'll get your metric conversion right?
Yeah, you'll get the time conversion right.
Yeah,
you won't have to convert. It's zero in both metric.
Well, Christian, what have you been up to? What kind of tech have you been what kind of tech things you've been working on?
Mostly tinkering with more Java coding, but took a look at the Windows 8 consumer preview as well. And interestingly enough, some things do load faster. Primarily, if you look at Windows Media Center, it seems a lot more responsive in Windows 8 than it ever was in previous versions.
Really?
Including the HD Home Run.
Big time. It's just
Why don't you give that a try?
Binary is very clean for it, and it's really responsive overall. And that was, I believe, using the latest Silicon Dust Home Run Prime drivers and firmware. And
to give an example of why that works faster for me, so I was never able to stream HD over-the-air content over my wireless to my laptop with any consistency. It would start getting choppy right away.
Yeah,
and
It
doesn't chop at all.
Really?
Yeah.
No, it streams flawlessly.
Wow. So this is the first I've really heard of this improvement with Media Center.
Yeah, not only Media Center, but just EXEs in general seem to have a much better time in Windows 8 operating. So I don't know if there's some kind of architectural changes there, but yeah, you can tell in Media
Center.
It's
closing down all the stuff in the background. You're not running all the background processes. It's really good at shutting stuff down.
Right.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, you can just tell in Media Center. It's the same interface, same look, same features, but my goodness, the load capability is a world of difference.
I definitely agree with that.
So I may still hate the interface, but I think they've got a lot of internal stuff that they've actually improved upon.
So you're an interface hater too, huh?
I'm an interface hater, but I think if they could reincorporate an interface that actually worked with all these internal improvements that I think aren't going to really show up until people start playing around with it more.
So Christian, what do you think's lost with the new interface? I don't want to belabor this too much because most people may not care about it, but what do you feel you're not getting from the
Most Windows users, I mean, since Windows 3.1, we've had a traditional start menu, so you're looking at almost 17 years of people being used to having a list view start menu. So when you take that away and you give people tiles, they're going to either expect, okay, there's some way to go back to the start menu, just like how if you're in a Windows right now, you can always switch between the nice looking start menu and the classic looking start menu.
Right.
So I think taking away the start menu is taking away an essential identity that was in that all these Windows releases. So Windows users in general have lost a portion. But when you go to the UI itself, as a first-time installation, I feel infiltrated by the cloud. I see the SkyDrive and the Hotmail, and for the average user being required to have their live account as their login. And the first thing I say is, how do I get to my programs? And one of the biggest and most irritating things is the fact that they've put things in places where average people are going to install this and they're going to have to go right to Barnes & Noble and buy the Windows 8 for Dummies book. Because let's say you open up Internet Explorer, the new Internet Explorer 10, you have the Metro skin for IE10, and then you have the actual desktop version. And the Metro skin, you will get in that Metro skin, and first-time Windows 8 testers will look at it and say, how do I get out of this? There's no X button in the top corner. There's no indication of a close button. You see a little thumbtack on the bottom right-hand corner that says switch to desktop view, and only then can you close it out. It's not like you can even backtrack easily within the Metro app from a first-time view. And again, I may have overlooked something, but from a usability standpoint, to have to do all that just to even kind of get a workaround to where I'm supposed to be is difficult. The second thing, I think, is for the average guy, they're going to start getting confused between the Metro interface and their actual desktop. Right now, when you type in your username and password in any Windows environment, you go to a desktop. In this case, when you type in a login, you go to a bunch of tiles on the screen. So so here, right now, we have the tiles up. So the average user is going to say, okay, I just installed Windows 8. This must be my desktop. So they're going to say, how do I want to browse for files? So they're going to look around, and then eventually they're going to get to the right-hand side, and then they're going to see Windows Explorer. So let's go ahead and click Windows Explorer. So then all of a sudden it's going to be like, whoa, wait a second. Now I'm back in a desktop.
Right.
So then they're going to say, all right, I want to go to that start menu I'm used to now that I'm in the desktop. So they put their mouse to the right corner, and oh, what do you know? We're back to tiles. So eventually they're going to make that association. There's no longer start menu, now it's these tiles. So they're going to say, okay, so these tiles must be some kind of smart way for me to access programs quicker. So I want to browse the internet. So I'm going to go ahead and click Internet Explorer. Huh, that's weird. I thought that this was supposed to take me back to a desktop environment. And now I have this strange URL, and I'm seeing more tiles with frequent visits. So I'm going to go ahead and visit a site. So click any site.
Okay.
So Internet Explorer does its job. Can't load the page.
Let's be fair here. Let's go to a site that actually, there we go. We'll go to Mike's site.
So it's loaded a page. So, okay, great. I read my news for the day. Now I want to get out of here. Without the pin, show me how to get out of here.
What do you mean without the pin? So you
go back to the start.
Okay. Now, you hovered to the bottom right corner or bottom left
with
corner?
With the mouse.
Okay.
So Jim, this is your desktop we're looking at?
Yeah this is a VM.
So can I do a little counterpoint here for a minute?
Yeah, sure.
So my first thought when it came up was, okay, this is interesting, but I'm not quite sure how to get around. Okay? And I think what changed the way I look at things and what really made me appreciate this is that the start menu is not gone. The entire user interface is the start menu. Okay? So everything we're looking at is a blown-up version of the start menu. Rather than an icon and a title, so rather than saying Word, Microsoft Word, and then clicking on it, now there is not a Word button yet, but there will be. There's a Word button, or there's an email button, or there's a Facebook button, or there's a Internet Explorer, that you don't have to even hit start in the first place to have your start menu up. You start from an expanded version of the start menu that fills the whole screen.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. If you want to switch to that list of all programs, then you can do it in a couple different ways. So one of the ways is to right-click Jim, if you wouldn't mind. And then you can...
Yeah, one sec. I dropped down and come back. What am I right-clicking on?
Just the desktop anyway.
Sorry.
And then there's an All Apps button that comes up on the bottom. And then you click that, and it will show you all of the apps that are on your computer in one big screen. Okay, so those are the two versions of the old Start menu. So now you can see that what you're looking at is actually an enhanced version of what you thought was gone. The Start menu is there. It's just up all the time.
Okay, so one big feature of the Start menu since Windows Vista has been the ability to easily search for things, whether it's actually a program or if it's
a document. There already. So Jim, hit the Start button again, so you're out to the main window, okay?
Yep, one sec.
Okay. And so what's an example? So let's say what was...
Let's say we want to search for like a Word document or a file.
So you probably... Well, you may not have any of those on there yet, Jim, but let's think of... Type my name. Type Chris Lux.
Just start typing,
yeah. Okay? Now, everything on the right there is something you can search. The default is apps, so you don't have any apps called Chris Lux. But you might have a file, and you certainly have a person. So if you go down to people at the bottom there and click, it's going to go into your people app. And if I'm in your list, which apparently
I haven't logged in.
But you can also go to mail, and it would have found every email from me. And you could also have gone to files, and every file that you and I shared or that was worked on together would be in there. So without typing anything, without having any clicks anywhere, you're in that Start menu, you just start typing something, and you can go to anywhere on your computer. You could search the Internet. If you click Internet Explorer, it will search for me or search for your name. So click Internet Explorer. It's going to launch Internet Explorer and do a Bing search for your name. Okay?
Yep.
So without ever hitting the Start button or clicking anything, you're already in the Start menu. Okay? So that, to me, was the first big thing. When I realized that I was living in the Start menu and that they hadn't taken anything away, they just made what we always used a lot better, that made a big difference.
You know, that's a feature, Chris, that's a lot like, and I forget what the WebOS called it, but they had that as well, type from anywhere, or search from anywhere, or whatever from anywhere.
That's nice.
And you would just start typing what you wanted to do.
Yeah.
So in this case, you know, maybe I want, you know, the other night I was looking for the control panel. So
that's right. Type control panel. There's your app. See, it was right there on the left. You didn't have to click anything.
Right.
And I think you may have clicked on weather or something. But yeah, apps right there.
Right. Right.
So the other thing is, like, if you're trying to do settings, you know how sometimes you're like, oh, how do I change the screensaver settings or whatever? If you're in that main settings, you can type screensaver, and then you saw that the second thing there was settings, right? So it doesn't really have anything for an app in there. But if you click on settings, there's 5 different options. Well, 36 if you don't type in the rest of it. But
this is nice here, though. Start screen,
but these
lock
are
screen.
All mm-hmm. these are all individual options within these menus that some people will never find. So rather than saying to someone, "Oh yeah, you got to go to Properties, Windows, Control Panel, Display Properties, Screensaver," you know, you can just say, "Type the word screensaver," and it's going to take you where you want to go. And maybe you have a screensaver app, so you can pull up the app. Or maybe you have a screensaver email where someone mailed you information on how to get that. Or maybe you wanted to do an Internet Explorer search. Just by typing that, then looking and saying, where did I actually want to find this? It'll get you there quicker.
Yeah,
and think about how well that can work with a keyboard and mouse or a touch screen entry. You know, all of that is so much more seamless than it used to be.
Yeah, that is intuitive. It'd be interesting to see if when we start seeing what kind of viruses people are going to develop for Windows 8, if there would be one that manipulates the Metro interface.
You know, someone's going to try, but you know, the thing is that you can't get an app through unless it's vetted. You know, so you're not going to be installing a Metro style app like on a Windows on ARM thing.
Right.
But sure, there's going to be people installing stuff on their computers that it may do something where, you know, it hides something off to the side or it makes you click something you weren't supposed to. But, you know, there's people are always going to try to mess with you. You know, the other thing about getting around is so that was the first big thing I came across. The second thing you were kind of talking about was that you were having to launch these things when you were used to looking for a program. And to me, what I think they're starting to do, which is the same thing they did on the Windows Phone model, is they said, you know, the average person doesn't say, I want to look at photos of my grandkid on my son's Facebook page. They say, I want to look at photos. And they click the Photos button. And it says, oh, here's photos from Facebook, here's photos from SkyDrive, here's photos from your computer. It's all in one place. And maybe he doesn't know where they came from, but if you have him linked to your Flickr account or to your Facebook account, the stuff's just going to show up there. Yeah. Right.
There's nice chest bump there.
That's a nice picture. So, like that. Right. So these things are just going to be there, and it's putting multiple sources in one place. Okay. So the Metro style apps that they're putting in there now aren't necessarily the equivalent of a full desktop app, which is why they still want you into the desktop when you're working in an Adobe Photoshop or when you're working in a Microsoft Word, they let you go back out to the full-featured desktop environment. But for the run-of-the-mill stuff, for the, I want to check my email real quick, I want to check my messages, I want to check the weather, I want to check on my stocks, you know, that stuff is all active, live, it's sitting right there, and in essence what it is an enlarged version of the start menu that many people think is gone, you included, Christian. But I think it's there and just in a much better format. And I'll rest my case for now. So,
good, solid point.
Yeah, no, good stuff. I've both on Wednesday and today, I found it really handy to be able to just fire up the VM and
now, work in there. Have you had luck installing the Home Server Connector on here?
Yes.
Yeah. I've installed
it in two places with no problem.
I get through to like the end, and it gives me an unexpected error, but it shows as being connected. It's kind of strange.
Do you run it as an administrator?
Yeah, I believe so. I'd have to check,
okay,
though.
Okay.
I'd have to check.
So
I haven't had trouble Skype crashing.
That I has haven't been, used Skype in it too much.
Yeah. And I know John Zadler's had it on his desktop, and he's been using it full time. That's really the best way to test this thing, is to force
Absolutely.
Yourself into it.
Absolutely. And, that, and like I said, the first couple of days I was like, oh God, why did, you know, I can't find things. How do I do this and that? You know, and all of these apps are still buggy, okay? The music app pains me the most because I'm a Zune subscriber. I'm paying them, you know, $15 a month for my music. And it signs me in and then doesn't let me use my Zune pass.
Really?
Because they're phasing it out. So it's going to be something else, and it's going to work eventually. But as that like bleeding edge person that already pays them, I just wanted it to work right off the bat, and it didn't. And that was like, oh, guys, come on. But it's cool. It needs a lot of work to get to be a full-fledged app. It's not even as good as Media Player yet. But it'll get there. It'll get there. I like the concepts of all the.
From a privacy security standpoint, where do you sit?
What part of? Do you think privacy security has changed?
Well, I mean, obviously, with all the connectivity between the Metro interface and your Windows Live account and. All these other services.
I'm used to my phone being linked into Windows Live all the time. So,
let's say someone hacks your Hotmail. Then they have the same login for your Windows Live, which means they have the same login for your computer and all your other services.
True. I'm of the belief that I'm not important enough to hack. Okay? That there's no... like. For someone to hack my Windows Live and then find a way to remote into my computer and then find a way to get anything of value or that could damage me from my computer is pretty remote. The passwords that I use for any of my financial information or any of my important, you know, encrypted stuff are completely different from my Hotmail. And if someone wanted to break in and do that stuff, they could break in my window and come sit on my computer and look around. You know, that would be just as much a violation to me as if somebody, you know, figured out how to hack my password and then took the time to search out my own PC. I don't see myself as being vulnerable from that standpoint. So no, I see this as no more of a security change than anything I've ever had with a computer.
Christian, do you? That's a good question. I think it is a very valuable question, or a very valid. I guess that's what I want to say. Very valid question, and that it will be important as these things do come together that live account will control a lot of things, and or Hotmail or whatever it might be. So, Christian, did you have anything? That was a good coverage, Chris. That was excellent. Thank you for walking through that. I had not seen that just type feature. I think that's what they called it in the WebOS.
Yeah.
Just type. And
play with it, because it really does make a difference in how you use the WebOS.
Yeah, the whole idea was just, okay, what do I want to do? Just put it in. And eventually you could just say it, right? And it would just do its
thing. I think you can already. So, I think if you turn on speech recognition, you can just say, like, search, and then say a name, and it'll just go.
Search for this, bam, it's in. So that'd be pretty interesting. Might even work better than Siri. Just saying. Mm-hmm. Christian, did you have any? Do you have any Christian Corner stuff?
Christian Corner is going to rest his case.
Very good. Hey, quietly while the iPad was coming out, Microsoft released some news on the next version of the Xbox that's going to come to us in 2013. You know, that's what they're saying, right? Is the company it's going to squeeze one more year out of the current Xbox sales, and then the company will show the new Xbox 360 or whatever they're going to call it at E3 this year's E3. I'm sorry, next year's E3. So June 2013.
Where did you hear this? Because I want to say I just saw a headline that said that was not the case.
Oh, really?
I saw something on Engadget a bit ago.
That's what I'm thinking.
This is on Business Insider.
Hang on, Jim. We're gonna.
Oh yeah, let's bring it out.
It's like Microsoft being like, whoa, hold your horses. Yes, that was out there, but this is exciting podcasting right now. Listen, okay. Microsoft says there will be no talk of new Xbox hardware at E3 or anytime soon.
Well, this article says 2013, June 2013.
Well, that's...
That's a year from now. June. You think so?
I don't know when E3 is, but...
Well, June 2013.
Well, it won't be then or anytime soon. So,
well, the next E3 is June 2012.
Oh, okay. So maybe it'll be E3 2013.
Yeah.
But they're basically saying don't get your hopes up. But they say that all the time.
Yeah. Yeah. So. It's interesting, you know, that Xbox console, you know, will need a refresh. It'll be about 8 years old by that point. Although they've made
got a half one. It got a makeover.
Yeah. Yeah. True. 0.5. Yeah. Kind of a 0.5 update to it, and I still haven't bought one.
You'll like it, man. You'll be like, wow, my old one sucked. This is great.
You think it would be wrong to give my wife an Xbox for her birthday?
Yes. Even your wife. And she'd be about the one person that I would say go for it, but...
That could be the end. That could be the end for sure, so... All right. Well, I've got a bunch of material to tag on to the end of this. Chris, anything else showing up on your tech radar that...
Let me see here. Anything? I'm just kind of looking around, see if I got any other toys. I don't think I have too much. So,
yeah.
You know, it's just a short story, but we all have friends and family that kind of see the technology that we use and play with and want to jump in as well. And, I had a friend in medical school that followed me down the home server pathway, and he bought an HP Media Smart server, and it died on him a few months ago, and it was pretty much unsalvageable. But he had all the data on his disks, so I helped him build his first PC over Skype. He'd never built a PC on his own, so
I
helped him pick out all the parts, and with the help of the Home Server Show forums, because there were some great ideas of really good parts to build a new system. And we spent 2 hours building it on the phone, and it was really like nice to encourage him and be like, nope, that's where that goes. You plugged it in the right place. You know, that's how much pressure you're supposed to feel when you put in the, you know, the memory and all that. And he gets it all done, and he goes, all right, I'm plugging it in. Moment of truth. Hits the power button. Nothing.
Oh, no.
And I'm like, oh, all right, make sure everything's plugged in real tight. Still nothing. Right, so we've troubleshoot it for like 40 minutes. Can't find a damn thing.
Yeah.
So, and I was like, dude, I'm not there. Like, I don't know what to tell you. And he doesn't have like I know we do. We have all these extra parts everywhere.
Right.
You could just swap things in one at a time. He doesn't have any of that. So I'm like, you got to find a local geek. You know. So I sent him to a local computer repair guy, and the guy runs a bunch of diagnostics. He has it for a week before he gives it back to him. And I'm like, oh, my God, what's going on? You know what he finally says was the problem? That I didn't instruct him to install the standoff pegs between the motherboard and the case.
So it was shorting out on the...
He thought it was shorting out on the case. And I was like, you know, I think in the old days that was a problem. I think there were like certain old cases or weird motherboard designs, but I really didn't think that had anything to do with a modern...
Yeah, it does. I did that recently, actually.
Did you really?
Yeah, it might have been a little bit over a year ago I did that.
So you really do need a peg no matter what?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Okay. So might that explain why my home theater PC occasionally just shuts off for no reason and reboots?
Yeah.
So I should...
Could be.
Gut it and put pegs
in.
You
gotta have the standoffs.
Wow, wow! And then see, and then I did a search online, and I read lots of people saying, "Oh no, you don't need them. You don't need them."
No,
but all right. Well, hey, so I've learned something.
I'll be honest. I've installed them in some of those cases. They have raised. You know, they've got raised standoffs already in there for you.
Yeah,
and I've just installed it straight on top and haven't had any problems. But.
Like maybe those raised where the case has like a punched out indent,
or
raised where there's like a new thing screwed into it.
Yeah, so there's a little bubble and then the screw pieces go into that. So you can set the motherboard on top of that and it's raised up enough
that it keeps the
board off the case.
That's what his
I know, I'm just saying, I've done that straight and it's worked.
So I learned something and I may need to fix my home theater PC because I don't know why else it's just crashing
it's a good
all
idea.
Of a sudden. So.
It's a good idea to use the standoffs.
So a little note to everybody that I didn't know this, and I consider myself somewhat geek savvy, but it's a bad thing when you spend all that time. And unfortunately, it cost my buddy $150, so I think I owe him a lot of beer.
Did he blow the board?
No, the guy. Okay. That's just what the guy charged.
Oh, the guy charged him, huh?
You know, in fairness, I think it's all right because, you know, it took a lot to find that because since he didn't put it together, he didn't even think, oh, maybe they didn't install stands behind this. And it wasn't until he took the motherboard out and said, oh, I would have put these things in. And he screwed them in and it worked. So, you know, I applaud the guy for finding that and for it actually being the problem. Part of me thinks it wasn't that and he just like, you know, the next time he put it together, he plugged the power button in properly or something.
Correct,
but, you know, I'll eat some crow and let him get the victory.
Hard to tell. Standoffs are probably it, though.
So, So stupid tech issue. But I also bought some software. Just 2 seconds on that.
Yeah.
So I got a copy of HDR software by Photomatrix.
Okay.
Photomatrix Pro. It's I've done some HDR work in the past where I've taken kind of the 3-step-off image exposures so that you can get more out of each picture. And I reprocessed some of the old ones I'd done with this software, and there's no comparison. They look so much better. So if anybody's ever looked at that software and thought, oh, I can just do it in Photoshop, I don't think I can.
It's called Photomatrix?
Photomatrix, yeah.
Okay.
And it's a little bit pricey, but I found it on a discount. It's from hdrsoft.com. So it's sometimes up on coupons. Sometimes there's different things. There's like an academic discount, things like that.
That might get you a guest spot on JPEG to RAW.
It might. It might. but it's a cool little piece of software. I think that's all I got.
Cool. This week, I'll close with this. This week, we did, twice a year I do a large Oracle conference here in the Omaha area for a user group. And I've always struggled with the scheduling of it because this time we had 36 breakouts, two keynotes, and then a day before we had three roundtables and four demo ground sessions. So lots of things to schedule over the course of a day and a half. And if you've ever tried to do that in Excel, or I used to build just a HTML table, in LiveWriter, and keep them in those cells, and you'd add to the cells, and it worked out okay, but the schedule was really getting too big to manage that way. There's a company called Schedge, S-C-H-E-D, Schedge.org, and they've just, and I don't know how long they've been out, but I stumbled across them, and they actually, for $99 per event, they have a pretty powerful scheduling agenda-like feature for events just like this one. And so the nice thing was, not only could it show, the schedule at its website, but you could embed that in your own site if you wanted to, as well as they had a viewer for Android and iPhones that was not an app. You could just go to the site, it would automatically display right on those devices. And so for the first time, we were really able to push the schedule out to a wider audience and get a larger adoption or a larger viewing audience with it. And I thought it was particularly handy. So again, this is probably niche, but if you're in that, maybe you got something going on at your church or with the Boy Scouts, or you've got to plan a day-long event that has multiple things going on, this Schedge.org scheduling software will allow you to put in speakers and venues and locations and maps and different times. It color codes it automatically for you, so you can group events maybe by a silo. So we had Oracle Applications, we had Oracle Middleware, we had Oracle Database. Each one of those sessions then that was in that got a different color code. And
that was worth way more than $100 to you, wasn't it?
Oh, it was worth $1 million to me. Yeah, user group paid. I quickly said, all right, we're paying for this software. And it was really nice to use during it. They have some plans. If you were scheduling a lot of events, you could pay a monthly fee to do it. We just do two a year, and the $99 was more than worth the price of it. So Schedge.org, S-C-H-E-D.org. If you want to see what it looks like with a real schedule in it, you can go out to Heartland, H-E-A-R-T-L-A-N-D, HeartlandOUG.org. That's our user group site, and there's still a link out there. You can click on that, and I think you can still take a peek at that schedule. And if you want to see what it really does look like, we had 100 or so, 120 at the event, and it made printing out the agenda was really nice because it automatically had a print feature too. Went in there, I'd print it out and send it to the printer, and you could print a couple hundred copies if you wanted to. Very, very easy. Well, guys, thanks for coming out on a Friday evening, and it shows the state of our social life, but I appreciate you guys. A good way to start a weekend, and we've got I have a lot of editing to do over the weekend. I got behind, so I just finished up Spartan Radio from Tuesday today, so we'll get some home server show video done, and then I'll get this podcast edited during the weekend. So, Andrew, we missed you. I know you're out there doing a firefight with servers at this point, and we'll catch Andrew next week here on the Home Tech Podcast. Everybody have a great weekend. Good night.
Night.
Good night.
So just, okay, let me get this right. So just so that I can have a VirtualBox version of a Mac OS.
Yes. I don't want to do it. I want someone else to do it. Go to Afghanistan, set up a...
Oh, because that's a friendly country.
All right, go to Pakistan.
Yeah, because they're even friendlier.
And up in the mountain region and set up yourself a server.
Okay, but... Yeah, you know what's even more priceless? That awkward moment you walk into school and you see someone with a MacBook Pro running Windows Vista Ultimate on.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Vista Ultimate.
You're like, what are you doing? What are you doing?
But, Jim, I think everybody's ignoring, well, not everybody, but maybe the Microsoft people They can't be behind closed doors. I got to imagine behind closed doors are going, oh, my God, this Windows Phone thing is not – we're losing market share faster than we were running losing it when we had Windows 6.5 phone. And so somebody's got to be concerned.
Yeah, and but the workday's over at 4:30 and they go home.
And there's your problem.
Yeah. No, I totally agree. There's a lack of motivation or urgency. There's a lack of sense of urgency at Microsoft right now.
And you know who that comes from?
That comes from having a lot of money. Same thing's going to happen at Oracle in about 10 years.
And Apple.
Yeah.
It may take more than 10 years, but
yeah.
Usually
it takes about 10. You get everybody's works. I mean, they're killing themselves over at Apple right now with hours, and everybody's a gazillionaire. And pretty soon people are going to wake up in the morning going, so why am I killing myself for this? We're gazillionaires.
Yeah, let me leave.
And that's the beginning of the end.
It is. But, you know, I think with Microsoft, the problem is Steve, and Steve just needs to go. But he's so entrenched and has so much ownership that it's going to be he can ride that company pretty far down before they'll make him get out.
Well, but all right, so to go back to our numbers though real quick, because numbers don't lie. So Apple's quarterly revenue was 26 billion or something like that, 24, 25, 26 billion. Apple was 20 or 21 billion. That's Apple's best quarter ever, right? Mm-hmm. At 26 billion. Microsoft does nothing and still makes $21 billion, right? And that revenue is not going down. It's going up. They continue. Now, not a lot, right? They'll make $20 billion one quarter or $21 billion. I have to go back and look at the numbers exactly. I'm just saying. I could be off by $5 billion. No, maybe not that much. But what's scary to me is that Microsoft has created a cash machine that quarter over quarter just spits out money. And they literally, like IBM, you know, think about people go, yeah, well, you don't want to become, you and I had this argument a couple weeks ago. You know, the next, we talked about Sears and Walmart, you know, well, Sears didn't see it coming and they quickly were out of the game. Well, let's say in 10 years they were out of the game, right? Walmart pretty much put Sears out of business over a decade. Yeah. Retail and software are two complete, I think, especially in the space Microsoft lives in, which is enterprise software, unwind much, much more slowly than retail does, right? I mean, consumers move quickly. Enterprise does not. And almost 100% of Microsoft's revenue right now is driven from their enterprise products. And they're entrenched in every system. And so is IBM, to the point where IBM, their margins are smaller, but IBM still have revenues of about $15 billion last quarter. And you would go, you wouldn't think that their endowment, you know, and that's not the right word for it, but their technology endowment is so large that every month they make, you know, I think Microsoft, the guy from Oracle, I was with Oracle all week, and he said to me that SAP writes Oracle like a $900 million check every month for licensing. Every month. Just they're their biggest customer, and yet they're their biggest competitor. And I think that kind of crap goes on all the time. All right, we got some numbers up here.
Yeah, this is just...
I can't see it. It's too small.
I know. It's kind of fuzzy here. But I'll read it to you. So this is smartphone market the 3 months ending September 2011.
Oh, yeah.
And oh, by the way, it's gotten worse for Microsoft since then.
I won't argue with these numbers.
So Google at 47.3%, up 2.5%. Apple 29.6, up 2.2. RAM 16%, down 2.9. Microsoft 4.7, down 0.9. And Symbian 1.4, down 0.4. So Microsoft's actually losing market share faster than Symbian.
Yes. Yep. Yeah, because there's 6.5 phones are coming off.
Yeah.
Right now. Yeah. How quickly though did Android emerge?
I don't know. I mean, they
2 years.
Yeah.
2 years. In this market, and I'm not saying it's going to, and I'm not trying to be a Microsoft evangelist here because I don't think they'll get their act together. But it could. It could. And who knows? I don't know.
Well, you know, you wouldn't know it, but I am a Microsoft fan, and that's what makes, that's what makes me mad.
They'll have to.
I want them to come out and kick some butt.
Well, they'll have to win the tablet war at the Enterprise. That is the only place they have. I mean, they have already, for the most part, lost it in the handset. They'll have to win it on a tablet that's going into the Enterprise.
Zadler says, Ballmer could have an accident.
Yeah, quote, unquote. But, so, I mean, think about this, Mike, though. So take your Galaxy Tab into the average Enterprise environment and say, okay, I want to hook this. I want domain access. Right. Or take your iPad in and say, I want domain access. Mm-hmm. There's not an administrator on the planet that is going to give domain access to that. Take a Windows tablet. Now, we can't do it yet, but I'm saying within a year, take a Windows tablet in that's running the Metro UI and has the ability on a powerful tablet to go to the desktop. On ARM, it can't. And say to the administrator, you can lock this tablet down just like you lock a laptop down. The administrators who make the purchases say to the company, you want a tablet? You have to buy a Windows tablet.
So I think that a lot of tablet people buy it because it's just, I want to look cool. I want other people to know that I have a tablet. I'm really not going to do anything productive with it other than I think that browsing Facebook is productive, so I'm going to do that. You know, little things like that. So we had an argument going on in our company. And, you know, more so than a lot of companies, our company is very, we watch our dollars and we're very, does this make sense? I don't care what is nice to have, what is a need to have, and what is going to actually give us a payback. And it's one of the reasons we don't have broadband in our restaurants right now is because show me the payback. And everybody who comes...
Your customers aren't going to use it.
Everybody, if our customers use it, then they're going to be sitting there longer and not paying us any money.
Right.
So I see Christopher coming on here in a second, so I'll speed it up.
Okay.
So our president wanted an iPad, and our CFO said, no, you're going to abuse it. You're just going to use it to surf the web. It's going to be no good. And he said, I'm president. Get it to me. So there's a big argument there, one more than you would think. He eventually gets it, and he says, I want it for all of my executive vice presidents. So we got it for them, and they're out traveling one day, and he goes, hold on, I need to send an email. So what does he pull up? His laptop. And she goes, oh, no. If you wanted an iPad and you said that was going to be a productive tool, I want to see you send your emails out on that thing. You cannot use your laptop. And he said, oh, yeah, you were right about that. I never use this for anything other than surfing the net and looking a few things up.
Yeah.
And she goes, that's it. All gone. Because we found that they're really, if you can put some reports on them, there may be a consumption device, like here's my income statement, here's that, here's our sales report, something like that. But you don't need a $600 device with a monthly subscription price to get those kind of reports. We could do something much simpler than that. So really, it's if you want an iPad, executive, you make enough money, go buy it yourself. The company's not going to buy you one. It's basically what we decided. We'll happily buy you a laptop.
Yeah, I think the verdict is still out, I'll be honest. And I think maybe even with Metro and the Metro might make sense. Remember we saw these ultralight laptops where you'd open them up and you'd flip the screen around and you'd put it down and then it would still be Windows and you'd use these pens. Well, imagine if in that mode it was Metro. So you could do your quick, whatever you need to do, web, email, whatever stuff you would normally use a tablet for. And you could quickly get to that through your Metro. Then when you flip that up, turn it around, it flips over to the desktop. And for me, that would be the perfect mobile device.
Yes. And let me step back. The tablets as they are today, I'm saying that. But you're right. If you can integrate a real keyboard into that, then you – is that Chris coming in?
Yep.
Then you can do it. So I'll hop out so you guys can
– No, you're good. You don't have to hurry. But, Hey, Chris.